Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, folks. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. You know, we talk to some amazing people on these broadcasts, and today is certainly one of those. We're going to talk to a highly educated and accomplished forensic engineer. If you don't know much about what forensic engineers do, you're going to learn a lot, and I think you're going to be blown away by what they do. And the need for forensic engineers, for one, has never been greater than it is right now, and in a unique area that you may not have thought about. I'm talking about civil and criminal litigation, where attorneys and cases often rely on forensic engineers and their expert testimony to help resolve cases in courts, which also is something I think forensic engineers, when they got into the business to begin with, never thought this was something they would be called upon to do. I just have that feeling. We're going to find out because we have an expert in the field. His name is Mark McFarland. His company is called Discovery Engineering, and he's based in Boulder, Colorado. And as I wanted to point out, forensic engineers apply engineering and scientific principles in legal proceedings to help determine why and how something happened. They investigate and they analyze complex evidence to help lawyers, judges, as well as juries, of course, understand how technical evidence relates to a case. Forensic engineers also serve as expert witnesses when they provide expert testimony at depositions and also as trials. They're very valuable in those kind of situations. Our guest today, Mark McFarland, has contributed to a broad range of legal cases. Many of the civil cases involve personal injury and product liability arising from problems such as electrocution, faulty electronics, and malfunctioning communication systems, and other types of civil cases. Mark has also investigated insurance claims and license contract disputes. He's investigated criminal cases involving murder appeal, securities fraud, home invasion, and even sex trafficking. Many of these cases involve cellular and GPS evidence. It's a very connected world, as he points out, and I'm going to get him to expand on that, why cellular cases would come into play. Among his many accomplishments, he's been published in national and international peer-reviewed journals. He is a sought-after speaker at national and international conferences, and he also consults with cities and municipalities on engineering-related issues. And to give you an idea of the kinds of services he provides and testimony, it would be on subjects involving such things as electrical engineering. He is an electrical engineering expert, an expert in cellular evidence, mapping and analysis. He's a wireless expert, a telecommunications expert. He is certainly an electronics expert. Extremely knowledgeable in the field of electromagnetic interference, internet and technology, a definite expert in that field. Also patents and intellectual property. It's a long, long list that he is highly knowledgeable about. And just if you were to look at his website, Forensic Engineering and Applied Research, you would realize that there is a lot of knowledge and a lot of background here. So that's a little bit about our guest that we're going to talk to him today about his background, his experience, and also his experience as an expert witness in legal proceedings. So let's bring him on now from his headquarters out in Boulder, Colorado, where it's a chilly but a beautiful day today, high up in the mountains of Colorado. Mark, welcome. Nice to have you with us. How are you?
Doing great, Doug. Thank you so much for having me here.
Well, listen, I'm very impressed with your background. Do me a favor and let's take a look at your experience a little bit. You're knowledgeable in so many things. You know, what kind of background do you bring to this case? I mean, for someone like you, what kind of schooling do you have to go through and years of experience to gain all of this knowledge? Give us a picture.
So, it's a lot of schooling and a lot of good experience. So for me, my background is I have a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering, and that's from Lehigh University up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, a beautiful place. And then I went on and got two master's degrees in engineering. Those is in telecommunications engineering. The other is in engineering management, and that's really like quality sciences and that type of area. So it's been a lot of education. I'm also certified in the statistics and the quality sciences. And I've been really fortunate to get a lot of education over my career. And
Well, it shows in your knowledge. Obviously, that is an extraordinary amount of education. Let me ask you. I know you are functioning now as an expert witness, highly sought after. But I would imagine, you know, when you finished your education, this was not something you thought you would be doing. Would I be right in that?
Yeah, really isn't. It was something I knew about, and I guess what. In terms of what thought of what I'd be doing, I had the idea I wanted to move into this. What's really new and surprising to me about it are the different types of cases I've gotten involved in. That's kind of the biggest surprise.
Well, for example, I mean, did you work in the engineering field fairly heavily for a long period of time? Yeah, go ahead and explain a little bit.
No, for sure. I worked in industry for a while. I worked in industry. My first job out of college was I designed antennas on communication satellites for Lockheed Martin missiles in space, and that was an incredible job and learned a lot there. Then I moved on. I became a software engineer after that, and then I went on to the government. I moved that was all in Pennsylvania. Then I moved out to Colorado in 2002 and worked as a communications researcher for the federal government out here for a research lab. And then in 2015, I founded my company and slowly got that started and have been putting a lot of more time and effort into it lately.
Well, I wanted you to point out you have over 25 years' experience in design, analysis, testing, and the uses of electrical and electronic systems. So, I mean, you've worked at it for a long time, which obviously speaks for itself because of your background. So let's talk a little bit about being an expert witness in the legal side of things. Number one, I'm just guessing, the first time you were called in to assist on a case where they brought you before a jury, in a courtroom, a jury to testify, do you remember what that was like for you?
I do, and it was a very strange experience, actually, because this all happened during the pandemic, and I testified over Zoom, and I never imagined that's how my first engagement would be like that, but it was, and it was quite an experience. It was a very difficult experience, I think, trying to testify over a video camera.
Yeah, I can imagine that being really spooky. Have you actually done it in a courtroom live before a jury at this point or not yet?
I had a case not before a jury. It was a bench case before a judge. And this was actually another interesting case. This was right here in Boulder County, not long ago. And there was a mask mandate, so I had to wear a mask. The judge had a mask. The lawyers had masks. And that was also very difficult to communicate and convey information. That's pretty simple, but without seeing, I couldn't see their face, their facial expressions. They could not read mine, and I used a lot of facial expressions to help communicate my points. So that was also very different and not the typical expert witness experience.
Yeah, I can easily understand that, too. I agree with you. Testifying in a courtroom without being able to see someone's face really hides a lot. You could probably pull something over on the judge that way.
Yeah.
And
it's hard to build trust and rapport.
Yeah, very, very difficult. But let's talk about some of the kind of cases you get involved in. Most people have no idea. The only connection they would have would be from watching TV shows, like CSI, CSI Miami or CSI Hawaii or whatever, where they see court cases and people testifying. Are they somewhat realistic or not? How would you answer that?
Oh, yeah, there's a great deal of realism to them in the fact that there are these different positions and these different types of engineers and scientists and experts from all these different fields who contribute to, you know, our judicial system and helping us find justice and helping support these different types of cases. So it does exist. There's all these different types of fields where people work in, and some of the technology they show on shows like that may be a little bit exaggerated, but the actual positions are there.
Well, when you get called in to testify on a case, how does it all begin? I presume a law firm representing a client would be the first one to get in touch with you. Explain to me if that's right, and then you have to get involved in what the case is all about and then figure out why your expertise is needed. Am I right in that area?
Yes.
Tell
me about
it.
The typical way something like this runs, so on, let's say that like the civil side, for like a personal injury type case, a lawyer is going to get a case in that involves, let's say it's an electrocution. So they know they need someone with a background in that to, investigate this, take a look, and help inform the lawyer is the first step. And then normally the first step is also writing a report. So I would do an investigation, find out what happened, write a report, and that's normally the first step. And then the next step is things may settle. So when they settle, a lot of times things settled for me after I wrote a report, and if that happens, the case is over. But if things don't settle, then that's when it could move on to a trial. And then at a trial, I mean, I'm there to basically teach the jury just what the technical aspects are here and how this relates to the case and what happened here and why I thought it happened, and they just offer opinions on, you know, what really happened.
In a case like that where you're talking about electrocution, would that be because of a faulty product that resulted in someone being electrocuted or in some other manner that the party got electrocuted? I mean, there are many ways it could happen. I understand that.
The most common are things like someone tries to rewire something or modify something, and normally that can cause a lot of problems. And there's also problems with the things not being installed correctly in the first place, or it could be the way someone used it, or it could there's a bunch of different reasons. And that's normally my job, is to find out why or how.
So there you go. What kind of research do you have to do? And how do you find out those things? Does it mean that if you're in Boulder, but the case involves some incident that happened, for example, in Cincinnati, would you have to go and play around and try and, you know, recreate what happened to find out for yourself to testify? Or can you do it on the evidence that's submitted to you? How does it work primarily?
It depends on the case. Normally there would be an investigation if there were something like an electrocution, but if it's a case that involves, say, cellular records and things like that, or cellular evidence, there may be no need for me to go anywhere, and it's something that someone can just send me, and I can work with it from there. But when I do go and do an investigation, I'm looking for just things that stand out or evidence of a like an electrocution type event or electricity event, evidence of a spark or a flash that may have happened, and just different types of evidence of things, something that may have went wrong. And even things like circuit breakers may be. Sometimes I've seen cases where circuit breakers were replaced in a panel, and it stood out very strange, and there was old breakers with new breakers, and why would someone replace circuit breakers? So that was a key piece of evidence there to say, well, something's wrong here, and let's I'm going to look deeper here.
And you got to try and figure out why they did it. You become a private investigator in many, many instances, I would think.
Yeah.
Pretty similar to it.
And it's not
right?
so much not so much why wouldn't be my goal, but it's whatever they did, how did that contribute to someone getting hurt? now that there was something that was wrong here, how did that contribute to someone getting hurt?
Exactly. And that could very definitely be working on some kind of a product that's manufactured by a company that your testimony can help prove that the company made an error in making the product. Wouldn't that be true?
Right. It can, yes, yeah. Either they you know, someone did make a mistake or did not. Or I mean, there's so many different things that can happen and different reasons beyond just somebody making a mistake, you know, in terms of that. So there's all, there's a whole bunch of, a host of different reasons things happen. And
well, it's a very, very interesting field you've gotten into. We hear about witnesses, but then how do you describe an expert witness? I've kind of described you, but tell me from your point of view, what do you think makes an expert witness?
It's a position in the courts, really, where you're called to be a witness. So there's different types of witnesses. There's a lay witness, and that's what most people are familiar with, and that may be someone who witnessed a car accident from the street corner. That would be a lay witness, and maybe you're called into court to testify as to what happened, and you're only allowed to testify as to what you know firsthand and what you saw. No opinions, or a lay witness can't offer opinions, but an expert witness can offer opinions based on my education, my background and experience and different things like that, that I can offer an opinion as to, oh, well, I think this guy got electrocuted here at the circuit panel because, you know, this was installed improperly. And sometimes I don't know for sure. I don't know exactly. I wasn't there when the problem happened, but I piece this together, similar as a detective would for a crime.
Well, it sounds like it's kind of very, very interesting work. Do you feel that way about it? Do you find it being that interesting?
It's fascinating. It's always different. It's challenging. It draws on a lot of different skills, and you have to be sharp all the time, so it keeps me on my toes.
Yeah, I'm sure of that. Can you mention or talk about any specific cases that you found rather uniquely challenging to come up with the answers for your testimony?
One I think that's kind of more of a very common case that people come across, and I see a lot of errors in how people come up with their opinions here, is distracted driving cases. And those are when there's an accident and someone may be texting while driving. So I've been on cases where there was an accident and it was a auto parts delivery truck caused an accident, and then the person who got hit said, "Oh, he was the person driving was texting while driving. He's a distracted driver," and then the penalties are different, and that's just how these work out. So I was working for the defense to help them understand what was the driver doing. Was the driver distracted? And the opposing expert had said the driver was texting while driving, and then realized he didn't convert the time zones for daylight savings time, and the person was texting actually an hour after the accident. So there's kind of a lot of errors. I've seen a lot of errors just like that.
And to come up with that information, what did you have to do? Did you have to petition to get, their cellular logs and trace back when the phone was active? And not that I guess would reveal, when he was texting, right? You had to dig that
up. And that's what the lawyer would do, would subpoena these records and then get these records from the cell carrier and then hand them off to me, and I would analyze them. And the records normally will contain an instance of when a text was sent or a phone call was sent or received. So there's a record of those things going on, and normally when they happen, it has a timestamp and also a GPS location attached to it.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the various kind of engineering you do, it's pretty interesting because you do, and I'll get you to do it, an explanation of the various kinds of engineering. You do forensic engineering, you do a lot of applied research, you do discovery engineering. Let's take those as subjects and just focus on them a little bit. Forensic engineering, give me the simple explanation of that. What would that be?
That's just engineering for court cases, for cases in the judicial system. And it's explaining engineering principles to people who have to make decisions based on what happened.
Okay. So applied research, what would that involve?
Yeah, so the applied research is the work I've done in the equality sciences, and that involves really, it comes down to understanding variability and just variability in different processes, all types of processes. It could be a manufacturing process. It could be a process related to software development, all different things, and understanding just how can you track down variability, understand it, and then reduce it, really, is what people want, variability.
And then the other area basically is discovery engineering, which is that's your firm, obviously, discovery forensic engineering, but discovery engineering, what is that?
Yeah, that's really just the name of my firm, so I don't know that it's more of a firm name. In terms of in the legal system, though, there's a lot of what's called discovery that goes on, and that's when you're asked to produce documents, and people produce all different types of documents, maybe emails, all different types of information that's requested for a case, and that's called discovery part of the case. But more of my work comes in after the discovery. I get involved with the discovery, actually, on some cases, because sometimes a lawyer doesn't know what to ask for. They don't have a background in engineering, so I'll work with the counsel to help them, request the right information, so then I can give an opinion on what I need to work on there.
Well, it certainly does sound like an interesting aspect of engineering and applied research, which is, that obviously is the service you're providing. I'm amazed at where you got such a varied background to become an expert in so many different fields, from electrical engineering, which, that sounds pretty basic, electrical engineering, but you are a telecommunications expert. You're knowledgeable in electromagnetic interference, the internet and technology, the cellular evidence. You help map and provide analysis in the field of cellular communications. Explain a little bit how you acquired all of this different background. Did it all come from your education in school, or was most of it on-the-job learning?
A lot of it is from the education and actually on-the-job learning, too. I mean, but telecommunications is a very broad field. It touches on all different areas from like internet to wireless to microwave, cellular. It's a very broad, even things like audio. I mean, it's a piece of, and when my education in that area got a very good education in that area. So that was a piece of it. And then I've been very blessed, too, with work. With having worked in industry, worked in government, worked in research, that's just all different types of projects have really helped to broaden out my skills here.
What kind of work did you do when you were working for the government? What area was that?
So that was the agency I worked for. We were responsible for the engineering behind the government's management of the radio spectrum. So when we have these radio channels, like there's radio stations, TV stations, cell carriers have their own frequencies. Your car key fob has a frequency. All these different devices out there using the radio spectrum, and the government is charged with managing all of that helping all these different players play together here and work together without interference. And the work that I do is to help the engineering related to that in terms of a public safety radio system. So the government, that technology, or they assign channels differently, or whatever has to be done in the radio spectrum management, whatever they do isn't going to interfere with, say, police radios, or GPS systems, any type of public safety system. So we do the engineering there for that and help help them manage policy and inform them with some engineering know-how here.
Well, you know, it sounds kind of similar to that. I mean, that study and what you're talking about, I understand that. But it sounds a little bit like some of the confusion that's gone on with the introduction of 5G technology for the cell phones, which, as I'm sure people have known, they've heard about this now. The government has been prompting these big cell phone providers, cellular providers, you know, Verizon and others, to ease off on their 5G technology around airports because they're concerned about the effect on airplanes. That would be something you would be pretty knowledgeable about and you'd be called in to work on, correct?
Yes, I'm not that, and that was under the FAA, so there's different agencies in the government that work on this problem because, like, the spectrum is everywhere, and all government agencies, you know, use some of it, just like a lot of people do for all different things. So I wasn't involved in there. I'm at the Department of Commerce, at a research lab in the Department of Commerce, and the FAA has its people who do their thing, and there were just a lot of different issues involved there, and I honestly, at the end of the day, still do not understand fully why the problems arose or if they seem to be broadsided by them. And this is something that had a scheduled rollout, and it just seemed to be a big surprise to everyone. And that was what caught my attention the most, was how could this be a surprise now?
The point is, it's forensic engineers like you who are dealing with that issue. That's one of the most prominent ones we would know about, right?
Certainly, if this is something that caused an accident or caused a plane to crash, say, that's something and it's an issue that ends up in court. That's definitely something someone like me might get involved in.
So it's a really fascinating field to be in. As you look back, what prompted you to want to get into this field in the very beginning? Was your father an engineer of some sort, or where did your interest begin?
I have an uncle, belated uncle. He was a great man, and he was a licensed engineer, and he was also started working as a forensic engineer. As he got older, he was a college professor before that, and he told me about his cases he worked on, and he turned me on to it, and it was just always something I wanted to do, and I knew about it kind of since my 20s or so. But it just takes a while to gain the credentials, really, to be able to contribute in this area.
Well, it sounds like you really, really got intrigued by it in order to, not only get a bachelor's degree, but two master's degrees in the field. You certainly went overboard, and I don't mean that bad. I mean, you really went to great lengths to learn as much as you could. So it's proven to be obviously a very smart move for you. Do you recommend this kind of work? Would you recommend this to other young people coming up the ladder?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it really draws on a broad skill set because you need skills as an engineer. You have to be able to write well and speak to people and be clear. So a whole bunch of skills, and it's really rewarding to be able to contribute in these ways and see these different types of cases you're able to help people with.
Well, you know what? I totally understand that. Well, listen, this has been great talking with you. I wish you good luck and continued work as an expert in the field of forensic engineering and court cases and things like that. I know it's interesting and obviously presents many challenges for you. If you're interested in getting in touch with Mark, he has a great website. It's discoveryengineering.net. Discoveryengineering.net. Our guest name again is Mark McFarland, and as you've heard, he's highly, highly accredited and studied in this field and accomplished and just a very, very accomplished engineer. So, Mark, thanks for the time to talk to us. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much and continued good luck to you, okay?
Thank you so much, Doug. Thanks. Bye-bye.
You're very welcome. Absolutely.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
We sure do. Take care, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. I'll see you next time. Bye for now.